As we enter our time of reflecting during this service, I invite you to read along silent with me on 505 in the back of your hymnal. Again, I will just read and ask you if you would want to read silently along with me. A reading from Thich Nhat Hanh. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become wholly ourselves. Let us be aware of the source of all being, common to us all and to all living things. Evoking the presence of the great compassion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourselves and towards all living things, beings. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other. With humility and with awareness of the existence of life and of the sufferings that are going on around us, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts and on earth. Amen. Well, hell has frozen over. Our nightmares have become daymares. I wish those words were in all our scriptures and creeds, because in each time and each place, people like us come to a moment like ours today, when our worst nightmares and darkest forebodings see the light of day. How many of us find ourselves taking cover? How many of us now understand the horror of the cover pages of the current magazines? Harper's Magazine, for instance, for number one this month, pictures a woman holding a huge, scrunched-up comic book picture of the president with a bold, revolutionary typeface at the bottom, "Disobey." Ms. Magazine chooses these urgent words to splash across its cover this month: "Rise up." Variety asks, "Now what?" on its cover. Esquire, "Hater in chief." Time Magazine, a picture of the president with the words, "Nothing to see here." Atlantic Magazine's entire March issue instructs a would-be dictator on how to build an autocracy. And the most chilling to me, and this is where I may get in trouble today, the German magazine Der Spiegel shows the current president holding a bloody machete in one hand and the bloodied, just-severed head of the Statue of Liberty in the other. Increasingly, we find ourselves in a land that few patriots recognize, where one's truest value is determined only by size of voice or pocketbook or military might or number of Twitter followers. This is no surprise. We were adequately apprised. Even if we said with Sinclair Lewis, "It can't happen here," history has awakened and bitten us once more in the rear. Good morning, my dear adopted congregation. Every time I visit with you and climb this stage, I set forth upon an experiment, seeking to refashion some ill-dressed idea, reform some tired habit, and even resurrect some long-dead virtue. Through the years, thank you very much, you have been very, very polite, as I challenged worldviews, assert that humans do have free will, and that Socrates remains correct. The unexamined life is not a human life. Thank you. And now to get in trouble. Perhaps now, more than ever in our short democratic history, we have entered an era of threat, the age of uncertainty. We have had such times before, but not with someone in the White House so praised for being so disengaged with history, so unafflicted with the holy practice of self-doubt, so dismissive of all those who do not look like, think like, live like, or like him. Shimmer has become silver. Hate, a halo. Ignorance, badge of honor. So I wish in our religious traditions we had some kind of creedal formula that says, well, hell freezes over and over. Maybe the preamble to the seven principles of UU should now read, remember that hell will freeze over, and we should ever ready ourselves for that cold season. These seven principles are our faithful practices. What really keeps me up at night? It's not a scandal. No revelation of wrongdoing, no evidence of crony capitalism, corruption, graft, or meddling with foreign powers, or anything that would dissuade a sizable proportion of voters from supporting their idol. What really keeps me up is this Sisyphean quest for us to roll the stones of reasonableness and of critical thinking and compassion up the Kool-Aid mountains again and again. We are only 9 weeks in. This is the honeymoon, folks. Enough of this. I'm sure our collective blood pressures are already in the danger zone. But I need to set a contextual stage for how going radically dark and staying radically human may just be the faithful practice and habits required of us for the living of these days. Now I'm going to briefly outline and then refute 3 temptations for those opposed to the direction of our world today. One extreme is to fight. Rise up. Get in touch with your inner anarchist. Throw Molotov cocktails of words and signs and gestures and the like, hoping that they will find some target. The mantras of this extreme fight group includes by any means necessary, or extreme times call for extreme measures. However, when you attempt to curtail the civil rights of anyone, even as you exercise those very civil rights in your own protests, well, you will die on the sword of self-righteous anger. Your brief flash of meteoric light will illumine nothing. In the words of John Lennon, there's too much repercussion in the usual violent forms of revolution. I prefer evolution. So you have to take a peaceful method to get peace rather than not caring what method you do take to get peace. You can sing along with me. You tell me it's the institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. And if you go carrying around pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't going to make it with anyone anyhow. Y'all knew this. If this were a lone dictator we are so carefully not naming this morning, one who is unsupported by sizable populations, maybe the anarchist extreme would gain some traction, but we are here to listen to and to love the millions of loyal supporters of the status quo. And anger is not a renewable national energy resource. We can and we should pay attention to anger like we should to a canary in the coal mine. But anger alone is the gateway drug to hate. James Baldwin puts it this way: most people discover that when hate is gone, they'll be forced to deal with their own pain. After fight, the second extreme is to escape. Flight. To Canada! The Netherlands! Drugs. Can I say that? Netflix. Close the shutters. Turn off the news. Deny. Na 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 na. If it doesn't get in, it can't affect me, right? My students are great arguers for the quick returns of denial. What is paramount is my peace of mind, and I'm entitled to a peaceful existence. It's incumbent upon me to erect walls and get for me and mine what we need to survive. Make me first again. True, escape happens. We all have our momentary checkouts, our vacations from reality. But when we deny and ignore, we only delay the moment of truth. And we live in this fantasy Disney world of being separate from each other. And I mean a false separation from our president and all his men. Because here's the truth. You won't like this. We discover only deep inside ourselves the very enemies that we loathe outside. We just can't escape what is true, yet unexamined, and it's about ourselves. It doesn't help to escape because our baggage comes with us. Maybe it's time to do a TSA screen on ourselves, my fellow travelers. Flight, like fight, is not a sustainable way to live. The third extreme in this quick tour of the F words is freeze. The evolutionary purpose of freeze is to allow us to quickly assess a dangerous situation. It gives us time to decide whether we do fight or flight. When animal prey has been caught and feels helpless, it freezes in order to fake death, which might give it a chance to escape. However, when prolonged, freeze deepens into paralyzing permafrost, leading to feelings of helplessness and disassociation, numbing and being ruled by one's phobias. Faked deaths become real deaths. All that wonderful you is just now frozen energy and icy potential. Fear is the cheapest room in the house, said the Sufi poet Hafiz. I would like to see you in better conditions. So if I made my three points well, then I've called into question the traditional reactions to trauma: fight, flight, freeze. And if you've been a member of this congregation for any length of time, you already know that we are much more than our automatic reflexes and responses. We are born into royalty, folks, beautiful enough, strong enough, blessed and gifted enough. We are already more than enough for times like this. When a great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe, no doubt. But that is not what great ships are built for. Can I get a witness? So, my fellow ships, built for deep voyages in this dangerous world, with timbers so constructed to withstand the worst of storms, yes, we are right to feel dismay, bewilderment, and astonishment that hell has frozen over. But you knew deep down it would. So what now, my fellow travelers? I suggest we treat our times as a conversation partner, and let's ask, what is it that you, these times, want to know of us? When the reverberations of November's shock subside in us, might it shape a new space in our hearts to embrace these days as a teacher who has come to open our lives to new worlds? Can we find in ourselves a courageous hospitality towards those who are difficult, painful, and filled with dread? May we find how more natural it is to build bridges instead of walls. These days, I feel, can be used as a lantern to illuminate the new qualities that will and must emerge within us. I'm actually thankful for these days. Yes, I am thankful. for they are the invitation of Socrates to shed and release whatever has become false within us. Uncovering, I hope, a confident tranquility that will calm our inner storms to stillness. May we find the wisdom in these days to ask it, why have you come to us? Why seek out my friendship? What do you want, O troubled days filled with troubling people, to take us? Where do you want to take us? What do you want us to know and create in us so that we may be more fully alive? Don't hold your breath for change out there. The issue is how to breathe in change. This is our time. This is our time to hoist the sails and breathe into them the winds of change from our lungs, from our breath. Don't wait willy-nilly for the change to come. Be the change instead. The winds of change. Hope is the caboose at the end of a long train. It's a coming, though you may not see it as you wait at that crossing, but it's a coming. Leonardo da Vinci observed 500 years ago that we know more about the movement of celestial bodies than about the soil underfoot. And this still rings true to us today. And so my model for us today, this is why you won't invite me back, my model for us today is a rather humble animal located in the humus. Underfoot is where I'd like to point us. Charles Darwin counseled us. It may be doubted whether there are many other animals who have played so important a part in the history of the world as have these lowly creatures. What are you talking about, Mullinax? Earthworms. While hate as national policy trickles down, polluting our ground of being, let us remember the earthworm. Down in the dark, amidst the muck, the mire, the mud, there are millions of earthworms doing one thing, and that one thing is the utter foundation of all life. I'm going to make my point into a bumper sticker. Earthworms turn crap into fertilizer. Without earthworms, there'd be no healthy soil in which any crop could develop in the first place. Earthworms condition the soil for the healthy seeds we know our generation and generations to come are to plant. If you ask which group of organisms would cause the most disruption to life if they were lost, my answer would be not fish, not bees, not humans, it's earthworms. They are irreplaceable links in the food chain. They act as hosts for diverse symbionts and parasites, and they are the major detritus feeders responsible for soil mineralization and recycling of organic matter. They take that which is dead and make it into something that supports life. Tireless, day, night, earthworms swallow decaying matter. They never sleep. They never cease burrowing, riddling and honeycombing even the most dense clays and compact soils. As they tunnel, they ceaselessly devour the earth and all that it contains, dead leaves, dead roots, dead vegetables and animal remains, minerals, microscopic vegetable life of the soil, and as they digest these, and then they excrete topsoil. They turn crap into fertilizer. Need I belabor the metaphor? Without fanfare or permission or complaining, the humble earthworm in the humus makes human life possible. They transform the bad, the most vile, and the smelliest into topsoil. Like the earthworm, do we not have the innate capacity to turn trickle-down hate into floods of mercy, loneliness into community, disease into hate, refugees into people of welcome, prisoners into restored citizens. So, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there's injury, pardon. Where there's doubt, faith. Despair, faith, hope. Where there's darkness, light. And sadness, joy. Sounds like an earthworm resume to me. Our genius is the human in the humus, in the dark, doing good deeds, undercover, taking the BS of this world and neutralizing it into the fertilizer we need for the great spring a-coming. Teach someone to read. Visit the prisons. Feed the hungry. Love the unpopular. Tonight, the Social Justice and Outreach Team is sponsoring a program on refugees and resettlement right here. There's a lot of underground movement on this issue. So join Charlotte and Carol and other earthworms here at 5:30. Walt Whitman says so well, this is what you shall do. Love the earth and the sun and the animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone who asks. Stand up for the stupid and the crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Argue not concerning God. Have patience and indulgence toward people. Take off your hat to nothing known or unknown. Go freely with powerful, uneducated persons and with the young and with the mothers of families. Re-examine all you've been told at school or church or in any book. Dismiss whatever insults your soul, and your very flesh shall be a great poem. Our roots are in the dark, folks. The earth is our country. Why do we look up for blessing instead of looking down and around? What hope we have lies there, not in some sky full of orbiting spies and weaponry, but in the earth we've always looked down upon, not from above, but from below. Not in the light that blinds, but in the dark that nourishes, where human beings can actually grow souls. As you know, humus and human have the same origin. Let us worm around this earth and create from below the conditions where compassion and justice get firmly rooted. Let us have global worming, not global warming. Be like the earthworm. Take the crap and render blessings from it. Before I step away, we must ask the question of whether I am not insane. Okay, Mullax, where's your hope that this is true? Where's your proof, Mark, that your earthworm theory is right? One, you know as well as I, things that get buried don't stay buried. Two, Thomas Carlyle was right. No lie can live forever. The very truth has to change its vesture from time to time and be born again. But all lies have a sentence of death written down against them. Three, this earthworm scenario is correct because William Cullen Bryant was right. Truth crushed to the earth will rise again. Four, I'm confident this morning because of James Russell Lowell. Lowell was right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne, yet that scaffold sways the future. And I'm confident today because the Bible is right. What you sow, you shall reap. So, my fellow earthworms, let us go and sow ourselves. Two stories, and then I'm out of here. An old man was sitting in the shade of an ancient banyan tree in India, whose roots disappeared way, way, way down deep into the swamp. He noticed a commotion where the roots entered the water. A scorpion had become hopelessly entangled in the roots. The old man made his way carefully down the roots of the tree, finally coming to where the scorpion was trapped. He reached down to free the scorpion, but each time he touched the scorpion, it lashed his hand with his tail, stinging him painfully. In time, his hands became so swollen that he could no longer close his fingers. He withdrew to the shade of a tree to help his tree see if his swelling would go down. There's a young man watching all this, not me, of course, observing him and then started laughing at him. You fool, wasting your time trying to help a scorpion that can only do you harm. But the old man replied, simply because it's in the nature of the scorpion to sting, should I change my nature, which is to save. Last story, and then I promise I will sit down. My best friend is navigator over at a retirement center here in Western North Carolina. Folks there got concerned this past week when a woman suddenly went down very, very fast, and it was determined that she needed some radical brain surgery to live. So brain surgery happened, and tongues wagged that she was on her last legs and all. You know how contagious rumors can get among very tiny communities. Well, my friend visits her and her husband, and the woman asks for a hairbrush while in her hospital bed. Her husband asks, why? Honey, you're completely bald from your surgery. Why do you need a hairbrush? Without a moment's hesitation, she retorted, to stimulate growth. That's it, folks. Faith to see what isn't there, to turn dreams into deeds, hate into mercy. Let's go humus. Let's go dark. Let's get out of the range of the cameras and the microphones, the CIA, the NSA. Just do our quiet, humus, human duty to find the crap. Take it in and transubstantiate it, good Catholic word, transubstantiate it into goodness. What's the UU cover this month, this quarter? Lighting the torch of Lady Liberty. And I also recommend pages 30 and 31. It talks about how to be a patriot in these days. Don't miss it. This is who we are. That is what we're made for. We were made for these times.